You're listening to the Family Matters Podcast, brought to you by the Montana Family Foundation. Join Derek A. Straker and Patrick Webb weekly for faith-fueled conversations about pressing issues, current events, and politics in the Big Sky State. When it comes to faith and freedom, family really matters. Well, welcome back to the Family Matters Podcast. Derek A. Straker here in studio with Patrick Webb, as always. Hi, Patrick.
How's it going, Derek?
Going well. Today, we have a special treat. For the first time ever on our podcast, we have a distinguished guest, Bowen Greenwood. Bowen is our statewide Republican clerk of the Montana Supreme Court. He is running for re-election, and he can talk more about that. But what makes Bowen special, well, there's not just one thing. There's many things. He's an author. He's been in and around Montana politics for decades. Very knowledgeable. He's a man of faith. And in a really cool plot twist, he once upon a time also worked for the Montana Family Foundation, where we work. So Bowen, we're really excited to have you here today.
I'm so grateful to be here, Derek. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You are the expert in the building on being a politician in today's culture and how to do that with grace and tact as a man of faith. And that's one of the things we wanted to talk to you about today.
Well, it's a subject that I love to talk about because I think we need so much more of it in the world we have today. No matter where you look, whether it's a traditional media article or on Facebook or whatever social media platform you choose, it seems like so much of politics today is just about that other guy has horns, that other guy's evil, he's the devil. And, you know, there's so much more to life than that, you know, and that I love the opportunity to bring a little bit of Jesus into a world where mostly all we talk about is how bad the other guy is.
And how do you go about doing that, Bowen? I used to work across the hallway from you at the Attorney General's office. And that's part of the executive branch. Then we have the legislative branch that has, you know, storied battles in the halls of the Capitol. And then in the judiciary, we have, obviously, it's built on conflict, party against party, and sometimes branch of government versus branch of government. I mean, how do you bring Jesus into your work?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it starts at the simplest possible level. I am the clerk of the Montana Supreme Court, which is exactly what it says. I'm a clerk. I'm not a justice. I'm not the highest ranking guy in that building by a long shot. The chief justice and all the other justices, and God bless him, even the attorney general, mostly want me to file the paperwork and not raise any trouble. And that's great. I don't want to raise trouble. But the point is, all of these, if you'll pardon the expression, all of these big dogs have their own agendas they're going at. And they're either sometimes on my side or much more often not on my side at all. You know, I am elected with a party label. I am a Republican. Austin is of the same party. Let's just say that most of the folks upstairs are not. Most of the folks on the court are not of the same party as me. So I spend most of my day interacting with people who don't agree with me. And the first part of bringing Jesus into this operation is just to be kind to them, just to love them, you know? I don't have to, every time I see the Chief Justice, tell him, my word, you were so wrong.
is it tempting, though?
That temptation definitely does exist. That temptation definitely does exist, and with some of them more than others. Well, let me postpone talking about which of them pose more of a temptation than others. But what I'm getting at is, you can talk to them. You can tell them a joke. You can ask them, how's the weather today? You know, I see you guys are in a particularly long conference today. I hope you're holding up all right. Just be a civil human being, you know? And I think, as I used to see it in the legislature when I was working for the Family Foundation, being a civil human being is an art that we are losing from our political class.
You know, Bowen, I was going to ask you that. I mean, you've been around politics for a good chunk of your career, if not all of your career. Have you seen that civility degrade over time? Maybe not within yourself, but all around you. And what can we do to restore that civility?
Well, first of all, please don't think I'm representing myself as a saint. I occasionally slip up and get grumpy myself. And in fact, if I'm telling the truth, I only got to know the Lord in about 2007. So I spent the first half of my political career being a very unpleasant human being. Mm-hmm. But there's no question it has just gotten to be a less pleasant world. And I don't want to make the case that you don't point out wrong. Obviously, we have to point out wrong when we see it. But that doesn't mean you can't occasionally have a cup of coffee with a Democrat. Or that doesn't mean you can't occasionally have a cup of coffee with the person who's on the other side of this issue with you. You know, this is one area where Jeff Laslofsky of the Montana Family Foundation has, I think, set a great example where he got into some pretty serious political battles with one faction at one time. And later on, he talked to me about how he went to each of those people and asked for peace for having to campaign against them. And over the years, we've just lost that art, you know. In the old days, I used to be able to run into Joe Lamson, who's an old line operative from the other side, and we'd joke about how the campaign went and some things we'd seen in the campaign, or like Bill Lombardi is another old line operative from the other side who I used to shake a few hands with and tell jokes with when we were outside the Secretary of State's office, both of our candidates filing at the same time, you know, and it's just harder to find that anymore, right. You know, in the legislature or in the campaign world, I don't have a lot of Democrat friends anymore. You know, I realize this will be a somewhat controversial statement, but mostly the justices upstairs are as close as I come to having Democrat friends. And it's just about, first and foremost, at the risk of sounding trite, what would Jesus do? How would Jesus speak to this person? There certainly are the occasional brood of vipers, but that most of the time you're talking to somebody who, as a matter of fact, all the time you're talking to somebody who God wants to see this person in heaven.
Right.
That's in the Bible. The Lord is not slow as humans count slowness. He's patient, wanting everyone to come to repentance.
Yeah.
God wants to see every progressive, every flaming communist. God wants to see them in heaven. And so when you're talking to people, I just like to remember that.
Well, and Bowen, if they're in heaven, they wouldn't be flaming communists.
Yeah, and just, you know, treating people with vitriol is not a great method or tactic mm-hmm. to get them closer to Jesus. Because if you claim to be a Christian and that's all they see coming from you is a bunch of hate, I mean, that's not a very attractive thing. So we absolutely have to remember that we are, you know, as imagers of God, that we are meant to represent him down here.
That's so right, Patrick.
Well, and I love that. I mean, this is the God we serve. Jesus happened to visit Earth at a time with, a massive culture war going on, a massive political war going on between Rome and Israel. And we had the Pharisees and we had Roman leadership, and there was all kinds of angst in the culture at that time in that particular region. And he was dealing with it on a daily basis, you know? And so that's the example we have. And I love that about the God we serve. So,
and if you will, the Romans were the other political party at the time, and yet Jesus healed their children. Well, Jesus healed them too.
Right.
So,
right.
That's what I think is the start of being a person of faith in politics, and mm-hmm. start by being a decent human being.
Yeah.
And this is pretty elementary level for most of the Christians listening, but I pray for the court every day. I believe that makes a difference. I believe that's more powerful than any law. Of course, this part isn't really serious, but I like to make a joke about my office is directly underneath the court. So as those prayers are going up, they got to pass through those guys.
I like that. I mean, have you seen the impact of prayer in your office and on the court? Have you seen prayers answered?
Well, yes, not. We all know how it is with prayers. Yeah, yes, no, and not yet. Yes. All those other stereotypical answers. But, you know, just for example, Senate Bill 140, which concerned how the governor is allowed to appoint justices and judges instead of having to use a Democrat commission.
Right.
And there's no theoretical reason why the Supreme Court should have allowed that bill to stand, but they did. And I take no credit, none at all. But I did pray for that outcome, and it happened. The court has, well, for example, there was at least one justice who I would call a Democrat who voted with us on a Planned Parenthood thing once upon a time. And I pray for that. And it's not me, but it's something that I prayed for that happened. And I see it just in the relationships between my office and the court,
yeah.
that it has grown much more civilized than it was when I first came in. None of the justices have ever said this to me. This is purely my assumption, and they're not allowed by their code of conduct to take a stand about a partisan race. But I'm pretty sure all of them voted for the other guy when I ran for clerk. And I came into what I felt like was a very suspicious atmosphere, and that has changed. It's a civil operation.
Yeah. Well, I've been in your office, and you do have some wonderful people there. You do feel like it's a welcoming place there.
That's a delight to hear. Thank you.
Yeah.
How big is your team, Bowen?
We have six people total, including myself. I'm the clerk of court, and I also have a deputy clerk and 1, 2, 3 full-time employees and another part-time employee. So pretty sure that adds up to six.
And what for those of our listeners who are unfamiliar with the clerk of the court, I mean, what is your daily function aside from swearing in or swearing at attorneys?
Excellent. I'm so glad you brought that up, because this is what I find that most people want to hear. People don't generally understand what a clerk of court is. You know, most people have heard that judges have law clerk, but the clerk of court is not in any way the same thing. The simplest answer is that there are rules about how something comes before a judge. And I think most of us intuitively understand that it wouldn't be fair if you could just call up the judge and say, "Hey, judge, Patrick did me dirty and I want to sue him." And the judge hears your side of the story before Patrick even knows you're suing him or you're talking to him or anything. It would weight the scales of justice to one side if you got your entire case in first. And so the theory is everything comes before a judge in a set order and according to a set of rules. First, you create a case, and then there's an opportunity to make motions. And one side presents their argument, the other side presents theirs. And on and on. And all of that is managed by the clerk of court's office, by my office. The most common way to say this, which I learned from my opponent, so I want to at least give him credit before I steal his words, is that we are the front door to the Montana Supreme Court. You want to create a case, it starts in our office. And interestingly enough, for the most part, it's pretty hard to even write a letter to one of the Supreme Court justices and not have it stop in my office first. You really, it's very hard to get to the court without stopping in the clerk's office first. And that is to make sure everybody gets a fair shake.
Yeah. And one of the cool things, just to touch on too, that I'm familiar with as part of a function of your office is actually swearing in new attorneys.
Right.
And I know you love doing that. I've seen you do it on a couple occasions with attorneys that were getting sworn in. Talk to me about that.
So Derek hinted at this earlier. You guys are going to get to hear my fundraising dinner circuit joke. Most people don't know that an attorney takes an oath when they begin their job. They get into law school, they pass the bar exam, and they take an oath of admission, which includes upholding the Montana Constitution and the U.S. Constitution. And on a completely serious note, that is a high honor to administer an oath to someone to uphold the Constitution.
Yes.
And I am so delighted that I'm able to exercise that privilege and say, raise your right hand and repeat after me. That is a great honor to be able to do that on behalf of the people of Montana. But anyway, attorneys do take an oath when they start their job. And part of the clerk's job is to swear them in, which was actually a huge disappointment to me because when I ran for this job, I wanted to swear at lawyers.
as a lawyer, I've that's fine. That's a good joke.
in any event, the clerk's job. So first of all, we are the front door to the court. We make sure the rules are followed. Second of all, we do manage membership in the Montana Bar, which includes swearing people in. And the other duty we have, which was actually what attracted me to the job, is we're a public information office. All the court's legal records are in the custody of my office, and we make them available to the people of Montana.
Yeah.
Now, those of you who follow Montana politics closely will be aware that the court has not always been super forthcoming about all of their records. And I can say that in those times when they haven't been forthcoming, none of those records were in my care. If it's a record that I take care of, it goes to the person who asks for it in a day, usually, and certainly not a full 2 weeks.
Right.
I believe very strongly in transparency in government, in sunlight, in public information. You know, most of us in this room probably know what the Montana Constitution says, that the people have the right to examine the documents of the government. And that matters. You know, the people don't truly own their government unless they can see what it's doing. So that's a part of the job I love, is to be able to show anybody who asks, here's the motion, here's the brief, here's the order that changed that. Those are sort of the three main areas that the clerk works on. What I personally choose to spend my time on in that office is that... Well, let me back up a little bit and say that most people are surprised to learn that the Supreme Court does a whole lot of garden variety law. Mm-hmm. You know, we all think of the Supreme Court as being where you decide questions of gun control and abortion, and those are certainly big deals. But 80% or more of our work is just garden variety criminal law. You know, this guy was convicted for drugs and he appealed his conviction, and so we're dealing with it. Or this family is unfortunately going through a divorce and one side doesn't like the parenting plan, and so it comes to us. And most of those people, a large number of the garden variety criminal law and some of the people appealing, you know, domestic law and family law, they can't afford a lawyer. And you're not guaranteed a lawyer to appeal. You're only guaranteed a lawyer at the first stage at the trial court. So when people can't afford a lawyer and they want to appeal their conviction, they try to do it, we would say self-represented, or the Latin legal term is pro se. And most of them have no idea what they're doing.
Right.
And they come to my office because they're trying to appeal to the Supreme Court and we're the front door. And so I take that job for myself in the office. So I read a lot of prisoner mail and, you know, it's what I do is try to figure out, what are they actually trying to do here? Do they want to file a writ of habeas corpus? Are they trying to appeal, et cetera? And it's very rewarding work, just because it's people who really need somebody to help them out a little bit. You know, I don't want anybody to misunderstand me. 99.9% of the people who are trying to appeal their cases to the Montana Supreme Court are exactly where they belong. I overstate the percentage a little bit, but the court upholds somewhere in the range of 90%+ of lower court decisions. So right. Most of the time, there's no need to let somebody out of prison. But that doesn't mean they don't need prayed for. Right. You know, if you're in prison, you probably need prayer more than most. Not prayer to get out, but prayer for help, to change your life, to get right. back on top.
Right.
And so I find that job rewarding because you get a lot of people who obviously need prayer. It can make a man cynical, of course. And you get another one of my fundraising dinner circuit jokes here that to judge by my mail, Deer Lodge, where the state prison is, Deer Lodge must be the safest place on earth because there's not a single guilty man there. But, that's part of the front door to the Supreme Court aspect of the job, but it's the part I choose to work on myself.
Now, you had touched on earlier, you had mentioned the power of prayer in your job, and you had said that, we talked about Senate Bill 140. You'd also talked about maybe one of the justices that wouldn't normally be on the same side of a probably an abortion issue, because you mentioned Planned Parenthood. Now, for our listeners, there is currently an appeal to the Montana Supreme Court. It's actually more than a decade in the making. I know you're aware of what I'm talking about. It's a parental consent to abortion case that was a law passed more than 10 years ago. It's been enjoined for more than a decade, and it's finally on appeal in front of the Montana Supreme Court. I would just encourage our listeners, based on what you said and what we know to be true, Bowen, to pray for the justices making that decision in that case. I know Montana Family Foundation has submitted an amicus brief in that case, arguing for parental rights in that context, so that parents have a right to not only know, but to consent or withhold consent to an abortion procedure for their minor daughter, their little girl. And then the other thing I would mention, Bowen, another thing our listeners can be praying about that is before the Montana Supreme Court right now, and it's related to Planned Parenthood. We have a constitutional initiative that we have talked about on this podcast related to Planned Parenthood just filed this. And it's on appeal right now because the Attorney General found it legally insufficient. But this would be a change to our Constitution that would allow for a right to abortion. And the way it's written, Bowen, it would allow for abortion, partial birth abortion. And frankly, the way that health care provider is not defined in this amendment, abortions could be performed by anyone deemed a health care provider. That apparently could include a chiropractor or a dentist. That's a really scary thing and something we need to be praying about for this state.
Well, I agree with you wholeheartedly. People should pray about that constitutional amendment. I happen to think the Attorney General did the right thing and that it's not legally sufficient to be on the ballot, but my opinion doesn't matter very much. But please pray.
Yeah.
For our court right now. And I might add that my portion of the court's website has a list of the big tension-getting cases that are before the court right now. If you visit court.mt.gov/clerk, you can see a list of the big high-profile cases that are before the court right now. And almost all of those are good subjects for prayer, but always abortion cases are good subjects for prayer. Mm-hmm. I'm really hesitant to put anybody on the spot by name, but I know we have, and this is not going to be much camouflage for anybody. I know we've got an old line Butte Catholic on the court, and that person should be reachable on the subject of abortion. We have one justice who I don't actually hate. we have one justice who, seems to be pretty honest to goodness neutral. And apply the law somewhat fairly. And, we have, for example, Justice Rice, who generally speaking has voted pro-life in the past on the court. we should do okay. Yeah, we should have votes available to us. These are people who could be reached by prayer, so definitely do pray.
Well, and the interesting thing to be praying about too, just to give people some ammunition when you're taking this to the Father, is the Attorney General in the legal sufficiency review. It had nothing to do with abortion, and it had everything to do with whether or not you are amending multiple parts of the Constitution in one constitutional initiative. And the Attorney General found that in fact is what's happening if this constitutional amendment were to proceed. It's actually changing more than one thing. And so the problem with that is that voters are expecting you to make one constitutional change per initiative. And it's actually unconstitutional if you do more than one. Some people call it a single subject rule or a single vote requirement of our Montana Constitution. So the Attorney General didn't have to weigh into the substance of whether or not abortion was legal or appropriate. Or now we know that this is a divisive issue, but what's not so divisive and what the court has ruled on in the past is whether or not a proposed initiative actually changes too many things.
You're 100% correct. And you don't have to be quote unquote pro-life to see that the Attorney General is simply correct here. And the Montana Constitution does not allow itself to be amended many steps at a time in one single amendment. Mm-hmm. So yeah, he's right, in my opinion. I'm not a justice, so you don't get to vote on that. But the one thing this probably doesn't matter very much, but just in case, I absolutely encourage people to pray about cases. I do not encourage people to try and call the court about cases, because those phone calls just stop at my office and we can't do anything about it. Which, you know, has happened a couple of times before that people get outraged about something the court did and want to call somebody to complain. And the only person they can call is the guy who doesn't get a vote.
I want to talk about another thing that you touched on, Bowen, and you had mentioned just in passing, you know, you were making some assumptions or even presumptions about maybe the political affiliation of the justices. The reality is for those listening that our judicial races here in Montana, whether that's for your local district court judge or your Montana Supreme Court justice, these are quote unquote nonpartisan races. But that's not the case everywhere, right?
So, people, this is just me speaking. No one else is talking here. This is, you're purely hearing Bowen Greenwood. The word nonpartisan is almost never true. If a person is involved in civic affairs enough, intelligent enough, cares enough to get into the process of running for office, they have a side. They almost always have a side. I am personally aware of a friend of mine who is a Republican, and yet because the race is nonpartisan, he's able to get elected time and time again in a very Democrat-leaning town. Nonpartisan is a way for the out party to camouflage their candidates so that they can get past the in party. I absolutely positively never endorse the word nonpartisan. And again, you're hearing me speak and not anybody on the court, but I will happily tell you all of those folks upstairs have a party.
So, Bowen, our listeners are very familiar with the challenges that our Supreme Court causes for, you know, enjoining legislation that the foundation has worked on in the past, especially. But, you know, as we go talk to individuals, especially new movers who are sometimes fleeing other states and coming to Montana, they're surprised that we have such, you know, liberal justices. And so, you know, you kind of detailing that this is largely because of nonpartisan races, and Democrats are able to kind of camouflage their candidates. In your opinion, why is it that the Democrat Party has been so successful in kind of camouflaging their candidates, especially in the Supreme Court, whereas it seems the Republicans have not been as successful? Just wonder if you could comment on that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to. And some of it may need a little background. The short answer is that there are many different kinds of lawyers in the world, but the kind called trial lawyers are the richest. And trial lawyers benefit from big government. And so trial lawyers are happy to spend a portion of their riches to elect justices who will win their cases for them. I'm sure the justices would tell me that's not how it works, but that's their business.
Why is it that trial lawyers specifically benefit?
So a friend of mine who is also an attorney would tell me this, that a lawyer who's defending a corporation, you know, if somebody accuses a big corporation of wrongful labor practices, the attorney who's defending them gets their $400 an hour, period. End of story. The trial lawyer is going to get a percentage of that $10 million verdict. And I'm sure you can see even 10%, which would be very low for a trial lawyer, amounts to a lot more money than $400 an hour. And that what that means is that a trial lawyer, somebody who goes to trial on behalf of a client to gain a verdict like that, what that means is, number one, they have more money to spend. But number two, they have a personal financial stake in the court that takes a side, that is on the side of the consumer or on the side of labor rather than, quote, on the side of the corporation. And, you know, I think all of us would say we just want neutral judges. We want judges who aren't on anybody's side. But if you're in the business of winning a massive class action lawsuit settlement and collecting a percentage of that take, which again is usually far more than 10%, you don't want a court. You want a court who's going to give your guy the win as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm. Well put.
So do you see that there is and just like in your experience with people that reach out to the court, and maybe it would be hard to make this judgment unless you had been there for, you know, many, many years, even decades prior. But do you see that there is a distrust of that institution or that we're seeing an increase in that distrust of the institution?
You know, sadly, that is the case. And again, you're hearing Bo and Greenwood speak here and nobody else, but I think they brought that on themselves. It's just that they like, you know, the offices of Supreme Court justices and district court judges are theoretically nonpartisan. We all know this, but the Family Foundation has a project of cataloging, or at least once had, of cataloging the donation records of candidates for district court judge. And it's funny how those all come out to lean to the left, or almost all.
Yeah, I think it was in the 90 plus percentile. It was very, very left leaning.
And sooner or later, there comes to be a certain level of cognitive dissonance with, for example, one candidate on December 31st. He is a partisan Democrat elected attorney general. And on January 1st, he's nonpartisan. That people eventually have a hard time swallowing that. And I think they've done it to themselves with this insistence that they pretend to be nonpartisan and yet rule in partisan ways.
Yeah, I think it's hard to accept this idea that once you put on that black robe, you've transcended your preconceived notions and your beliefs, and you're just a neutral being. You're no longer swayed by your personal preferences anymore. It's just hard for anyone to think that way. But there are other states, Bowen, that have partisan judicial races, both for their district court judges or what would be a district court judge, their intermediate appellate courts, and their Supreme Courts.
They certainly do. And I'm speaking now as an elected Republican here. If we could get an R behind those names, we would never lose again. I hate to sound boastful about it, but the people of Montana have shown what they want. If I may digress for a moment, my own first race in 2018 is a perfect example of that. I am an elected Republican. There's an R behind my name on the ballot. My opponent was a Democrat. There was a D behind his name on the ballot. My campaign budget was something like $20,000 for a statewide race, and his was more than mine, but not that much more. And it was something like 57% for me to 43% for him. And what that tells you is not that I'm any great shakes. What it tells you is that when the people of Montana have no other information, they want to vote for the Republican. Mm-hmm. And if we could get them that opportunity in every other race, we would be electing better judges. Please don't stop me if I'm going on too long. But the thing I'm trying to say is nonpartisan races deliberately take information away from the voters. They deliberately result in an electorate that has less information about who they're voting for. That guy who's running for judge has a side. He has a party that he votes for when he gets into the voting booth. Nonpartisan elections deny the people of Montana the right to know that information. And I consider nonpartisan not only to be generally untrue, but actively morally wrong. People should have more information. And I'm not going to be able to cite the statistics, but I have seen political scientists cite the statistics. Nonpartisan races actually result in lower voter turnout. Mm-hmm. So if, as we are told these days, any threat to democracy is unacceptable, holding aside any comment on the presidential race, if any threat to democracy is unacceptable, nonpartisan races reduce voter turnout and reduce voter information. They should be unacceptable.
Mm. Wow. And you see it play out time and again. Following each legislative session, we enter into a period of time I like to call lawsuit season. And, just in the past 6 to 8 months, we've had in Lewis and Clark County, where we are based here in Helena, Montana, 4 of our pro-life bills taken before the same district court judge, Judge Mike Menahan. And they were preliminarily enjoined on the same day from the bench, didn't even take the time to actually issue a written order, just enjoined them from the bench on that day. And what people don't know, what the voters don't know, the information that's been withheld because he holds a nonpartisan seat, is that Mike Menahan was previously a Democrat lawmaker here in Lewis and Clark County. And while he served in the legislature for the state of Montana, he had a 100% rating on the Planned Parenthood scorecard. And Planned Parenthood was the challenger in all 4 of those bills. And there are more examples.
And if the people had that information, they might make a different choice. Most people who observe the legal system also don't know the stuff that goes on behind the scenes about challenges to a judge or asking a judge to not take a case or asking for a different judge. And if, hypothetically, if judges are simply neutral arbiters and their previous partisan affiliation means nothing anymore, how come they keep going to the former Democrat?
Mm. Well, certainly an area that we can continue to pray for the state of Montana, for a more informed populace, for a more informed electorate.
And Bowen, obviously you have a heart to make sure that this office is serving the people of Montana the best way possible. That's very apparent with you trying to have a very transparent office, assisting people wherever you're able to. So increasing the trust in this institution, we've talked about, partisan races and how that may be a solution to kind of help restore some trust from the people of Montana. Do you have other ideas of some things that would be really beneficial to kind of restoring faith in the institution?
I believe in public information. The court makes a decision, which they have the power to make, that their own meetings are closed. And that's not a decision they allow any other branch of government to make. The executive branch must hold open meetings. The legislative branch must hold open meetings. The court does not hold open meetings. And I frankly think that could gain them some trust to open the process to the public. Now, they have a reason, and they've explained it to me, that an opinion might start off saying, no, this criminal is not guilty, he should be let out. And after much debate and discussion, it turns out he should not be let out. And so this guy's gotten his hopes up, and the victim's family has gone through undue stress. And if none of that had been public, none of that would have happened. But the same thing is true of the legislature. It starts off looking one way and ends up another. My personal opinion is that the court's decision to hold closed conferences does not help their credibility. I think that we've discussed partisan races would give the voters more information. Races electing Supreme Court justices by district would give the voters more information. I mean, Montana is a huge state, but if you're just electing somebody from the, generally speaking, southwestern Montana area, you've got a slightly better chance of knowing them than you do if half of them come from Helena, which is where we're at now.
Right, right. Well, Bowen, I know we're running short on time, but we could talk all day. And, you know, I'm fairly confident we will have you back on the Family Matters podcast. I just want to give you an opportunity to have the final word here on what you see as, I guess, if you could say there's a top three most important issues facing the state of Montana. Politically, culturally, spiritually, what are the top three issues in this coming year heading into another legislative session?
Well, since you throw spiritually in there in the top three, I mean, the number one most important thing is, Lord, please send us godly leaders. You know, people who know the Lord and who walk with the Lord will make all the difference. And if I may say so on what might be perceived as a controversial note, there are a lot of people in politics who think, I know there are only two sexes and I don't like gay marriage or abortion, and that makes me a Christian. And there's so much more to loving Jesus than just issue positions like that. But send us godly men who really know and love the Lord. Absolutely my number one issue. Number two, the Republicans need to do a better job of getting their constitutional amendments through the legislature. We could have fixed a lot of problems in this state if we wouldn't have had about four Republicans who weren't on board with any amendment whatsoever. We need to fix that problem. And I'm not saying every Republican idea for an amendment is a good one. I think there were 28 or something. So not every idea, not every amendment should go through. But are you trying to tell me that there's absolutely positively not even one single thing about the Constitution that can be changed? And if so, why are you bringing this abortion amendment? So number one, more godly men, godly men and women. Number two, more ability to fix what's wrong with our Constitution. And then after that, this is me speaking, life. Life matters. If you live in a society that doesn't even defend an infant's right to life, you live in a society that needs work. And I would love to see something really happen all the way through government, including the court, about protecting the right to life.
I love it. Bowen, thank you so much for joining us on the Family Matters podcast. And if you've made it this far, this is our longest episode so far.
That's my fault. Sorry.
But we really appreciate you tuning in. And if you have more questions for Bowen, obviously you can reach out to his office and learn more about him online. I understand you're running another campaign here.
Yeah, I am running for re-election, and if you want to swear at me instead of me swearing at lawyers, there's a comment form at greenwoodformontana.com.
All right. Well, thank you, Bowen. Thank you again for joining us. Thank you for tuning in to the Family Matters podcast. We hope you enjoy these broadcasts and keep tuning in. Thank you, and God bless.